Welcome to those on the webcast. Nebuchadnezzar. Who, when, where was Nebuchadnezzar? Well, we all know Nebuchadnezzar was quite a famous king of ancient Babylon, and he's been mentioned extensively in the Bible. 2 Kings chapters 24 and 25, 2 Chronicles 36, he's mentioned several times in Jeremiah, and Daniel chapters 1 through 4 and 5 also talk a great deal about King Nebuchadnezzar. So when did he rule? He ruled in Babylon from 605 B.C. to 562 B.C. That's a reign of 43 years, quite a long reign for a king of that era. And if you stop and think now, that's 300 years before Christ was born. That's a long time ago. That's about 2,600 years ago that he reigned. And you stop and think about that, that's about 100 generations ago. It's amazing that we even have any history of him, isn't it? And where did he rule? Now, Babylon was a city in what is today Iraq, and it's about 500 miles northeast of Jerusalem, in what is called the Fertile Crescent or the Mesopotamia. It's a rich valley where the Tigris and Euphrates rivers flow, also known as the cradle of civilization. And this area has a long ancient history. This is a place where Nimrod first settled, and of course that relates to the Tower of Babel, where Nimrod attempted to build the Tower of Babel. It's also near the land of Ur, the land where Abram came out of when God told him to come out of your Ur. At the beginning of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, Babylon was the supreme ruling power known to the civilized world at that time. And God had given this supreme rulership to Nebuchadnezzar. But he also controlled when he could and could not rule, and when he could again. Jeremiah 25:9 calls him my servant, and again in Jeremiah 27:6, he calls him God's servant. In 600 B.C., Babylon was a large fortified city that archaeologists estimate had a population of 500,000 people. Now, that was a large number of people in that era, 500,000 people. Babylon was a grand advanced city, had marvelous temples, highways, of course, the king's palace, and the famed hanging gardens of Babylon were there, one of the seven wonders of the ancient world, and the beautiful Ishtar Gate, which you may have seen pictures of. It has lovely blue glazed tiles, and it's been excavated today. Babylon was an extremely well fortified city. It had a deep, wide moat, an immense double wall, and it appeared an impenetrable fortification. But it seems that whatever man devises, another man can come along and subdue, and as the Persians did a few decades later, when they diverted the Euphrates River to gain access into the fort. And now, diverting a river is no small accomplishment, and the Euphrates River is quite a large river. So, as we look at what the Bible tells us today about King Nebuchadnezzar, we realize how much God controls and shapes events, not only of rulers, but also of those who obey him. As we will see, God gave this rule to Nebuchadnezzar, but he took it away and he gave it back again. So we're going to look at 2 Kings chapter 24, which tells of Nebuchadnezzar's conquering of Jerusalem. Initially, Jehoiakim, the king of Judah, paid tribute to Nebuchadnezzar. So let's look at 2 Kings 24 and starting in verse 1. In his days, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up, and Jehoiakim became his vassal for 3 years. Then he, Jehoiakim, turned and rebelled against him, Nebuchadnezzar. So God had prophesied in Jeremiah that he would punish Judah for their sins. And continuing on in verse 2, and the Lord sent against him raiding bands of Chaldeans, bands of Syrians, bands of Moabites, bands of people of Ammon, and he sent them against Jerusalem to destroy it, according to the word of the Lord, which he had spoken by his servants, the prophets. Surely at the commandment of the Lord, this came upon Judah to remove them from his sight because of the sins of Manasseh, according to all that he had done, and also of the innocent blood that he had shed, for he had filled Jerusalem with innocent blood, which the Lord would not pardon. Now the rest of the acts of Jehoiakim and all that he did, are they not written in the book of Chronicles of the kings of Judah? Verse 6, so Jehoiakim rested with his fathers. Then Jehoiachin, his son, reigned in his place. So Jehoiakim died, as and verse 7, and the king of Egypt did not come out of his land anymore, for the king of Babylon had taken all that belonged to the king of Egypt, from the brook of Egypt to the river Euphrates. Up to that time, Egypt had been a very powerful conquering nation in the world, but now Egypt was reduced to its own land, never to rise again to a major power. Verse 8, Jehoiachin was 8 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 3 months. His mother's name was Nehushta, the daughter of Elnathan of Jerusalem. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his father had done. At that time, the servants of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came up against Jerusalem, and the city was besieged. And Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came against the city. As his servants were besieging it, then Jehoiachin, king of Judah, his mother, his servants, his princes, his officers, went out to the king of Babylon, and the king of Babylon, in the 8th year of his reign, took him prisoner. He carried out from there all the treasures of the house of the Lord, the treasures of the king's house. He cut in pieces all the articles of gold which Solomon, the king of Israel, had made in the temple of the Lord, as the Lord had said. He also carried in captivity all of Jerusalem, all the captains, all the mighty men of valor, 10,000 captives and all the craftsmen and smiths. None remained except the poorest people of the land. And he carried Jehoiakim captive to Babylon, the king's mother, the king's wives, his officers, and the mighty of the land he carried into captivity from Jerusalem to Babylon. verse 16. All the valiant men, 7,000 craftsmen and smiths, 1,000, all who were strong and fit for war, these the king of Babylon brought captive. These brought captive to Babylon. Now, Babylon was only 500 miles away as, well, only, was 500 miles away as the crow flies. But to travel there, you had to go through some rugged country and across a desert. So the route to Babylon was a northerly route and then back south into Babylon from Jerusalem, which came out to more like 800 or 900 miles. So it was a long trip. And it was a trip by foot, basically by foot. It took about 4 months. Now you can imagine what that travel was like. Walking approximately eight miles a day, every day, for 4 months. Where did they sleep? What did they eat? What kind of facilities were there? By the time they had made that trip, that journey, they must have felt extremely tired and hungry and displaced. And that's where Psalms 137, verse 1 came in, as I asked John to play the By the Waters of Babylon. Psalm 137, verse 1 says, "By the waters of Babylon, there we sat down. Yea, we wept when we remembered Zion." Back to 2 Kings 24 and verse 17. The king of Babylon made Mattaniah, Jehoiakim's uncle, king in his place, and changed his name to Zedekiah. Now, we're all familiar with Zedekiah. Zedekiah was 21 years old when he became king, and he reigned 11 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Hamutal, the daughter of Jeremiah of Libna. He also did evil in the sight of the Lord, according to all that Jehoiakim had done. For because of the anger of the Lord, this happened in Jerusalem and Judah, and he finally cast them out from his presence. Then Zedekiah rebelled against the king of Babylon. And probably that was not a wise thing to do, because Nebuchadnezzar was a very powerful king, and he had put Zedekiah into rulership in there. Continuing on down there in the first part of chapter 25. Now it came to pass in the ninth year of his reign, in the 10th month of the 10th day of the month, that Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and all his army came against Jerusalem and encamped against it, and they built a siege wall against it. So the city was besieged until the 11th year of King Zedekiah. By the ninth day of the 4th month, the famine had become so severe in the city that there was no food for the people of the land. Then the city wall was broken through, and all the men of war fled that night by way of the gate between the two walls, which was by the king's garden, even though the Chaldeans were still encamped all around the city. And the king went by the way of the plain. The following events have more significance when you consider the foregoing. Judah had been very sinful in the eyes of God. Zedekiah and the preceding kings had been sinful. And Zedekiah had rebelled against Babylon. So the army of the, verse 5, so the army of the Chaldeans pursued the king. and they overtook him in the plains of Jericho, and all his army was scattered from him. So they took the king and brought him up to the king of Babylon at Riblah, and they pronounced judgment on him. Then they killed the sons of Zedekiah before his eyes, put out the eyes of Zedekiah, bound him with fetters, and took him to Babylon. The rest of chapter 25 tells of the destruction and pillage and the burning of Jerusalem, the temple and the walls, an event that's related in also in Jeremiah chapter 52. The book of Daniel gives us more insight into the being of Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel and his three friends, his three companions, were among those Jews that were taken to Babylon. So let's go and look at Daniel. And starting in chapter 1 and verse 1, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. The book of Daniel, yes, gives us a lot of insight into Nebuchadnezzar. Skipping down to verse 3. The king instructed Aphanez, the master of his eunuch, to bring some of the children of Israel and some of the king's descendants and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge, and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the language and literature of the Chaldeans. Verse 6. Now among those from the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And to them the chief of the eunuchs gave names. He gave Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, to Hananiah Shadrach, to Mishael Meshach, and to Azariah Abednego. Verses 8 to 16 tell how Daniel persisted in keeping God's dietary laws and the blessing that he was given for doing so. And then down in verse 17, as for these four young men, God gave them knowledge and skill in all literature and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding on all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days, when the king has said that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. Then the king interviewed them, and among them all, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore, they served before the king. And in all manners, wisdom and understanding about which the king had examined them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers who were in his realm. Thus, Daniel continued until the first year of King Cyrus, which would have been 539 BC. So you see, Daniel had a very long servitude in Babylon. Chapter 2 tells of Daniel's interpretation of the of Nebuchadnezzar's prophetic dream of the image which had the head of gold and the chest of silver, the belly of brass, and the legs of iron. And most of us are familiar with that dream and its interpretation. Most of us are familiar with chapter 3, when Nebuchadnezzar had Daniel and his three friends thrown in the fiery furnace because they would not worship the great golden statue that Nebuchadnezzar had made. But the most significant part of that event is the miraculous deliverance that God gave to Daniel and his three companions who worship God, that they came out of the fiery furnace totally unharmed. Chapter 4 tells of the rise, the fall, and the rise again of Nebuchadnezzar. So I'd like to take a look at that because it's just telling about Nebuchadnezzar. So starting in verse 1 chapter 4. Chapter 4, verse 1 of Daniel. Nebuchadnezzar, the king, to all the peoples, nations, and languages that dwell on earth, peace be multiplied to you. I thought it good to declare the signs and wonders that the Most High God has worked for me. How great are his signs, how mighty are his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his domain is from generation to generation. And then, in verse 4, I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at rest in my house and flourishing in my palace. I saw a dream which made me afraid, and the thoughts on my bed and the visions of my head troubled me. Papers here. After the magicians and the enchanters and the soothsayers could not interpret this dream, Daniel was called on to interpret the dream. Now, considering this is a story of an event rather than a doctrinal evaluation, I would like to read this in the contemporary English version. I believe it's easier to follow and better told in the conventional English version. And especially for our younger minds, it becomes more of a story. So I'm going to start in verse 10 of Daniel 4. And verse 10, Daniel 4, starts, in my sleep I saw a very tall tree in the center of the world. It grew stronger and higher until it reached to heaven and could be seen from anywhere on earth. It was covered with leaves and heavy fruit, enough for all nations. Wild animals enjoyed its shade, birds nested in its branches, and all creatures lived on earth on its fruit. While I was in bed having this vision, a holy angel came down from heaven and shouted, chop down the tree, cut off its branches, strip off its leaves, and scatter its fruit. Make the animals leave its shade and send the birds flying from its branches. But leave the stump and roots in the ground, surrounded by grass and held by chains of iron and bronze. Make sure that this ruler lives like the animals out in the open fields, unprotected from the dew. Give him the mind of a wild animal for 7 long years. This punishment was given at the command of the holy angels. It will show to all who live that God Most High controls all kingdoms and chooses for their rulers persons of humble birth. Daniel, that was the dream that none of the wise men in my kingdom were able to understand. I am sure that you will understand what it means because the holy gods who have given you some special powers. Now, for a while, starting in verse 19, for a while, Daniel was terribly confused and worried by what he was thinking. But I said, don't be bothered either by the dream or by what it means. Daniel replied, Your Majesty, I wish the dream had been against your enemy. And then Daniel gives the interpretation of the dream, starting in verse 20. You saw a tree that grows so big and strong that it reached up to heaven and could be seen anywhere on earth. Its leaves were beautiful, and it produced enough fruit for all living creatures. Animals lived in your shade, and birds nested in its branches. Your Majesty, that tree is you. Your glorious reputation has reached heaven, and your kingdom covers the earth. Then you saw a holy angel come down from heaven and say, Chop down the tree, destroy it, but leave its stump and roots in the ground, fastened there by a chain of iron and bronze. Let it stay for 7 years out in the field with the wild animals, unprotected from the dew. Your Majesty, God Most High has sent you this message. It means that you will be forced to live with the wild animals. Away from humans, you will eat grass like a wild animal and live outdoors for 7 years, until you learn that God Most High controls all earthly kingdoms and chooses their rulers. But he gave orders not to disturb the stump and roots. This is to show that you will be king once again, after you learn that God, who rules from heaven, is in control. Your Majesty, please be willing to do what I say. Turn from your sins and start living right. Have mercy on those who are mistreated. Then all will go well with you for a long time. Daniel says, Then all will go well with you for a long time. And apparently it did, until about a year later, when Nebuchadnezzar was basking in glory. And he says in verses 28 and 30, About 12 months later, I was walking on the flat roof of my royal palaces and admiring the beautiful city of Babylon. When these things started happening to me, I was saying to myself, Just look at this wonderful capital city that I have built by my power for my own glory. So at this point, Nebuchadnezzar was bragging and taking all the credit for himself. He had forgotten about the God of that Daniel worshipped. And verse 31, But before I could finish speaking, a voice from heaven interrupted, King Nebuchadnezzar, this kingdom is no longer yours. You will be forced to live with the wild animals away from the people. For 7 years you will eat grass as though you were an ox, until you learn that the God Most High is in control of all earthly kingdoms, that he is the one who chooses rulers. Verse 33. This was no sooner said than done. I was forced to live like a wild animal. I ate grass and was unprotected from the dew. As time went by, my hair grew longer than eagle's feathers, and my fingernails looked like the claws of a bird. Finally, I prayed to God in heaven, and my mind was healed. Then I said, Praise and honor to God the Most High. He lives forever, and his kingdom will never end. Even Nebuchadnezzar recognized the power that God had and who was really in control. Verse 35, to him the nations are less than nothing. God controls the stars in the sky and everyone on earth. When God does something, we cannot change it or even ask why. And this is Nebuchadnezzar speaking. At that time, my mind was healed, and once again, I became the ruler of my glorious kingdom. My advisors and officials returned to me, and I had greater power than ever before. That is why I say, praise and honor the King who rules from heaven. Everything he does is honest and fair, and he can shatter the power of those who are proud. So now we realize Nebuchadnezzar was a very powerful world ruler. He built a great fortified city, a kingdom in Babylon, but that kingdom was given to him, taken away and given back to him by God, as prophesied, as foretold. The life of Nebuchadnezzar proves how God is in control of world events and world leaders, those that have rulership. We also see that God does, at his discretion, divinely protect those who are true to him.